I'm Rodrigo Blankenship, and you're listening to the Savage Pads Podcast.
Welcome to the Savage Pads Podcast. I'm your host, Doug Battle. It's Alabama week, and UGA great Asher Allen is with us. Asher led UGA in tackles in 2007 when the Dogs last beat Bama in Tuscaloosa. He'll be sharing a bit about that performance and Bryant Denny, the special season that was 2007, and his thoughts on UGA's defensive dominance so far this season. This episode is brought to you by the only gym I know that's uniquely equipped to offer individual workouts amidst a time when many are hesitant to return to the gym at all, and that's Hotworks. I'm not going to name any names, but I do know at least one of my former NFL guests used to frequent Hotworks during his time in Athens. But anyway, Hotworks is a virtually instructed exercise program created for members to experience the many benefits of infrared heat absorption while completing a 30-minute isometric workout or 15-minute high-intensity interval training session. Here's how it works. Each person works out in one of their 10 saunas by themselves with a virtual instructor teaching classes including yoga, Pilates, ISO, bar, buns, bands, core, warrior, cycling, and total body blast. And in those 120-degree saunas, a combination of heat, infrared energy, and exercise work together so you can burn more calories in less time, all in complete privacy. And you can also do so without having to plan out your own workout at the gym. Hotworks has locations in North Johns Creek as well as in Athens. Give them a follow on Instagram at Hotworks Athens or at Hotworks Laurel Springs. And sign up for your free Hotworks session at hotworks.net. That's HOTWORX.net. Hotworks brought this episode to you. We've got a great one coming up with Asher Allen. Stay tuned.
Practice every day.
Man, oh man. Mono ain't mono.
He's definitely 6 hour miles, me and myself. As close as we have right now to rope climb.
When we score, I honestly did not know where I was for about 5 seconds.
Early on, you could see with Jake, just like with Fran talking to him.
Maybe one of the most underappreciated quarterbacks in the country.
And we got to keep feeding the running back.
I don't think we've yet to see the tight ends.
I think Georgia does a great job bringing pressure on third down.
Turn around 2 weeks later in the SEC championship, we look like a completely different team. And we made them look like a completely different team.
I mean, it's hard to get emotional thinking about it.
And it was my job to kind of get outside the corner. And
as soon as I let it go, I knew it was good.
From that point on, I kind of began to trust of Eric Murray as my quarterback.
The kid was just special.
I would say that he was onside.
Everybody respects the specs.
That's what every Georgia fan should hinge their hopes on.
Alabama and Georgia are the best two teams in the country.
I feel like we are the true running back you.
I have great confidence that we're going to see the personification of Georgia football.
Welcome to the Savage Pads podcast. We've got Bulldog great Asher Allen on the line. Asher, thank you for joining us.
Yeah, no problem, Doug. Thanks for having me.
Yes, we are very happy to have you, Asher. And as you know, Georgia's taking on Alabama in Bryant-Denny Stadium here shortly. And the last time Georgia played in Tuscaloosa was a game for the ages. You guys had a pretty young team that would go on to be one of the greatest in Georgia history. But at the time of that Alabama game, no one would have ever guessed that. You had a team that had recently lost to an unranked South Carolina team at home, and you had dropped from 11 to 22 in the rankings. So what was the state of that team going into the Bama game, and how did that underdog mentality contribute to you guys overthrowing the higher-ranked home team in Tuscaloosa?
Yeah, I would say that year was a special year for us because, like how we finished in the Sugar Bowl and all of that. We never doubted ourselves or anything like that. That South Carolina game definitely, I think, put a hamper in our overall year plans. But going into that Alabama game, I think we knew going in kind of their makeup. And this was, I think, Saban's first year or something like that.
Yeah.
So, you kind of didn't know what to get ready for, right? Because, normally you can watch film, but, this is a whole new Alabama team. But we knew they were good, like years past. And so Going into the game, I think we knew we had to stop the run. I think Coffey was a running back. I'm just sorry. You'll have to correct me if I'm wrong. But I'm just,
no, you're 100% so far.
Yeah. So so we knew they had a really good running game. Obviously, just the things that everyone's accustomed to. And so going into that game, we never doubt ourselves. You know, we were stacked. We knew we were a good team. And so going into that game, we just had to show up. And so but anytime you go into a going to a team, there's always a little extra pressure on you, and you get the fans and stuff like that. But that was a very, very fun game. I remember that.
Yeah. Well, I know, you know, in my notes here, I have you led the team in tackles on that one. And part of the reason Bama had to settle for a field goal in overtime, and we all know what happened after that with Matt Stafford to Mikey Henderson.
Oh, yeah.
And what was a legendary moment. But another legendary moment that season, fast forward a few weeks to Florida, the famous Stomp the End Zone touchdown. Can you walk our listeners through the whole play in there? I know Coach Rick was like on another level that season. He was just having fun with it, it seemed like, with you guys. And I can't imagine what it was like to be on that team.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. Coach Rick was – well, he was always like that. So with the guys inside the locker room, always fun, always having a good time. That game, he definitely was excited. You know, anytime you play your rival or – you know, Georgia Tech, Auburn, and your SEC teams, things like that. You got to step up. And I think that year was just so special for us that we knew we had the players, we had the camaraderie. All of us were just so close outside of the team setting. So when we got on the field, it was just like you were playing with your brothers. So, that was an amazing game. Dancing on the field. You can't lose if you dance on the field. That's just a rule.
You better not.
Yeah. So I guess once that happened, we were all in. So you had to figure it out. We had to win that one. But that was a special game. Hawaii, Auburn, you go down that whole season. It was just an amazing, amazing year, like you said.
Yeah. So at what point did Coach Rick tell you guys, you know, we're going to score first, and when we do, we're going to have the whole team run onto the field?
Yeah, I'm not going to be the guy to talk about that. I'm gonna leave that in the locker room. But if somebody else gave you some insight, then. But I'm a yeah. But you know, we went out there. We danced on the field, and that was. And I think it loosened everybody up when that happened.
Yeah,
it just everybody was just like, all right, man, let's just untighten our shoestrings. Let's just go out here. Let's have fun. And
Okay. Yeah, sure. Well, I know, a few weeks later, again, you referenced the Auburn game, black uniforms, and same effect. I mean, you guys were loose and having fun and playing well as a result. But since then, there's been controversy about the black uniforms. There's the old guard Georgia fans that think that they the change in uniform, you know, caused a loss the next year against Alabama. And then there's kind of the recruits obviously are always wearing them. The players are always seemingly wanting to wear them. I talked to quite a few former guys on teams past your years that didn't get to wear them that are a little bit envious of you guys.
Yeah.
And so I was curious, as someone that was on that original team, how often do you think those should be brought out? Or do you think they should be laid to rest?
You know what? Rarely. I think, our colors are red and white, and we got gray britches. That's what we – silver britches. Yeah, I'm sorry. So that's what we are, right? And so, you know, I ain't going to say nothing, but, you know, red pants and all this stuff. That's
not a huge fan.
Yeah, anything that's Georgia, I'm a big fan of. But, you got to red pants and, you know, all these different color stuff. It's like, come on, man, let's fall back. But, I'm a big fan of keep the jerseys red and white, keep the pants the same. You can change the material, keep them silver. And then the black comes out. I mean, like Auburn. I mean, when we wore black jerseys, we felt a responsibility with them because we knew that this hasn't happened in multiple years. So just like dancing in the end zone, you can't wear black jerseys the first time and lose, you know? Yeah. And then, yeah, you know, you start pulling them out every week. Now it's like, all right, it's just a jersey. So it's whether it's just a mental thing, but it's definitely when you first time wearing those black jerseys for that Auburn game, it was a sense of responsibility. But yeah. So I'm a big fan of, you know, the red and white is beautiful. Silver britches is beautiful. But as soon as we start getting into this other stuff, we start looking like a Thursday night football.
Yeah. color rush uniforms. Okay. So, you know, as we know, Georgia, they wore those one more time that year. Sugar Bowl won that one, beat down. So finished number two that year. And that's kind of that. And I don't know. I feel like Georgia fans view 2017 as this special year where we made the playoff and did something that Rick never did or whatnot. But 2007, if there had been a playoff, you guys would have been in. What are your thoughts in a playoff system? Where's that 2017 finish?
Oh yeah. We would have won the national championship. So that's my biggest that's the thing that that always haunts me, I think, throughout the Georgia career. It wasn't too many other things, but not being able to have that playoff system. We had, you know, just this computer system that you know, there's a computer out in Antarctica in an igloo making decisions for college teams. I mean, no one even knows who this computer person is, but I just that's how you decided, and they just pulled out numbers out of nowhere.
Yeah.
They determined your future. So our team, I mean, we were number one going into the season the next year. We were the best team, clearly. And so we would have played, if we would have played West Virginia, we would have played Ohio State. I mean, it doesn't matter who we would have played that year.
Yeah.
We would have beat them. So yeah, if they would have had a playoff system, we clearly would have been the top four, and then we would have took care of business. So that, all these other years are special, but that was the year. I mean, I think we would have been like 1980, you know?
Yeah. I mean, you guys really were. But at least by the end of the season, you may not have had the best season of any team, but by the time you guys were, you know, Stafford had come into his own. He was a young quarterback. And by the time you guys had made it to the end of the season, I think every Georgia fan felt like, oh, well, we could beat anybody right now. And it was just unfortunate. Didn't have the opportunity to. But special season regardless. And you guys kind of took it out on Hawaii in that Sugar Bowl that season, that last game in the black uniforms. But, you know, recently Georgia's defense has been playing at that level. I mean, last week's defensive performance to me was probably the most dominant since that game. Mm-hmm. And I was curious, as someone who was on that team and part of some great defenses at Georgia, what are your thoughts on this current group Georgia has, and your thoughts on them going into Bryant Denny going to take on the Crimson Tide on Saturday coming up?
Sure. I think our squad this year is really good. That first game was scary. That first half was just like, oh my goodness.
You know, yeah.
Like, did COVID like mess us up? Did we not have a chance to practice? But I think Bennett, I appreciate him. You know, he may not be the end guy we go with. You know, my humble opinion is he's probably not the guy that, you know, but what I like about him, man, he has gone in here. He's not sulking. He's not thinking like, oh, you know, I should be here or whatever the case may be. That's how sometimes somebody can think if you've been playing for that long. But he's come in. He's made all the right throws. He's been playing fearlessly. He hasn't been playing scared. He's comfortable. And when he throws the ball, I love it. He's throwing the ball as the receivers are coming out the break. What that tells me is that he knows the offense. He's feeling it. He's taking it serious. And that's big for a guy who, I don't know if going into the year, he was like third because, you know, he had some competition. But that just says a lot to somebody who, you know, who's played. You know all the things that has to take place for you to be able to step in and win the game. And then everybody rallies around the quarterback, regardless of how good your defense, offense, special teams.
Right.
You're only good as your quarterback. So I do appreciate Bennett doing that. So Whether we ride with him for the rest of the year, I think he's more than capable. But I think they're doing good. Love the running game. I think Zeus is doing his thing. Cook is continuing. He's doing his thing as well. I like how Zeus runs. He reminds me of kind of like a Hurst running back. You know, he's not looking to catch a tall sweep and just house it.
Yeah.
You know, he's not. That's not his game. His game is between the tackles.
Yeah.
I'm gonna give you. And he reminds me of like an Ezekiel Elliott, right?
Yeah.
You don't expect Ezekiel to take a stretch play and just go 80 yards. That's not even a thought process.
Right.
But he will, you know, go for, you know, 25 carries for 125.
Yeah.
And that are, you know, that's like a gut punch
like,
in boxing.
Like when it's like, man. When some running backs have 8 yards per carry in a game, they have like a bunch of 1 yard rushes and then one like 80 yard rush and it comes out as 8 yards per carry. But Zeus's 8 yards per carry is literally he's getting 8 yards every time he touches the ball and no more, no less.
Exactly. So I like that because
yeah.
That's how you build around that.
Yeah.
Right? You can have a flashy guy, but Zeus is a guy you'll build around. And then, I think our receivers are starting to find themselves. I'm really liking that number 10.
Kyrus Jackson. Kyrus Jackson.
What's his name?
Kyrus Jackson.
Okay.
Yeah. Chris Durham. Chris Durham said the same thing.
Yeah, I'm loving his movement, man. The way he'll catch a ball and just go, boom. You know, he knows how to. So I hope we feature him a lot more. And then obviously our, you know, number one, our main guy, just he's going to get doubled. I mean, he's getting doubled. He's going to continue to get attention. So everybody else kind of needs to show up. So I think on offense, we can be more than just average,
right?
You know, and just say, hey, we're going to be a good team. No, I think we really can do good. And then on defense, I mean, I love our defense. We just look so fast.
Yeah.
That's what I would say.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
From the D-line, the front seven, going, you know, sideline to sideline. I mean, nobody can just get outside of our tackles. Nobody can get outside of our linebackers. Everybody's moving fast. They have tenacity. And then with LeConte in the backfield, he actually reminds me of a Trey Battle.
Yeah.
He reminds me of him a lot because – kind of undersized, you know, skinnier guy, but he has ball skills. He's always around the ball, kind of like an Ed Reed. He's always,
yep.
You always just see him around the ball. And then I really like that. So he, you know, as long as everybody works with him and stuff like that, I think there's some other areas on defense that we can do a little bit better. We can be a little bit more physical on the outside in the secondary. But all in all, I think we got some good things going on. So yeah, going into Alabama, I mean, they got everything going. So
we just
can't shoot ourselves in the foot.
Yep.
You just can't, you know, you're gonna have a penalty here and there. You can't shoot yourself in the foot. And then you're gonna have to go out there with a winner's mentality and don't just go out there and just say, hey, if we play a good game, that's it. No, we need to go out there and win it. But again, Coach Smart he's taking us to championships. So he knows what to tell them.
Yeah, he does. And you mentioned them playing fast as a unit on defense. They're certainly going to have to with a guy like Waddle for Alabama. I don't know if you've seen him, but he is.
Now is he a receiver?
Yes, he kind of reminds me of Hill for the Chiefs. He's a speed demon.
Exactly. Yeah. I've seen him.
Yeah.
But we can run with him. Yeah, we got guys who can run with him, but we just have to get to the quarterback.
Yeah.
You can't just let him sit back there like Tom Brady. And just kind of barbecue and, you know, tie his shoes and all that stuff. He has to have pressure and they'll do that. But this is going to be a game where our secondary, because our front line is, you know, they got to put pressure, but our secondary, they got to be able to cover for, you know, 4 seconds and not have any kind of mistakes or anything like that. So,
yeah.
But yeah, we can do it. I think we're going to be up for it.
Yeah, well, I know our listeners are looking forward to it and appreciate your insight on everything. And I know you're on a timeline over there, so I want to wrap this thing up. But Asher, we really appreciate you coming on, taking a moment of your time. Obviously, you've got a family over there to attend to, and I know you're working as well. And so appreciate you doing this, and we are looking forward to Saturday. I guess you're kind of one of us now, watching the game, pulling for the team.
Oh yeah, man, I'm with you guys, man. I got my old fashioned. I got it.
Yeah.
I'm just sitting down, watching the game, yelling at it, and saying, "Hey, why don't you make this play?"
Yeah.
Reaching in a bag of chips. So
yeah.
I'm with you, but to the dog family, everybody, man, we love you guys, and go dogs.
Go dogs. Thanks, Asher.
Okay, my man.
I'll be a dog till I die. Till I die, yeah.
Woof. All right. Now, frequent guest of the show, Corey Amick, returns to reflect upon the roller coaster of a game that was Georgia, Tennessee. Corey, we were texting throughout that one. I know, I don't know. How nervous did the dogs have you in the first half?
I would say I wasn't nervous that we were going to lose. I was just nervous that we were going to like make it way closer than it ever should have been. And like, that was just the story of the first half.
I don't know, man. There was part of me that was thinking like, is this going to be last year's South Carolina game where the whole time you're feeling like, oh, we're not going to lose. It's just going to be closer than it should be. And I'm kind of embarrassing. And then it just keeps going. And you're like, wait, we're actually going to lose, aren't we? We were getting very, very close to that point on Saturday.
My dad is a Tennessee grad and raised me as a Tennessee fan. And I remember like telling him before the game on Saturday, like, because he loves like bringing up the 2017 game when they went on the Hail Mary. He was at that game. I was a sophomore at the time. And so he just loves bringing up that game as like the most recent and really only victory that Tennessee's had in the last 4 years now. But I was like, I will relive that moment over and over again if we can just keep this current trend of like UGA beating Tennessee by at least, you know, 20 to 30 points for the next decade. And
yeah,
so far we're doing it. So I feel okay.
It's like Auburn with the Trey Matthews, Josh Harvey Clemens play where they'll show that at like every Georgia Auburn game. And you're like, I'm okay with it at this point. Cause the more they show that, the more it makes me realize they literally haven't beaten us since Trey Matthews played for Georgia. Or they haven't. I guess they did beat us again, but then they lost the next week. So it basically, or 3 weeks later to us. So that one kind of canceled out. But yeah, with Tennessee, it's like they show that Hail Mary like it hurts us. And like Georgia was going nowhere that season. Oh, yeah. That was supposed to be Tennessee's year. Tennessee still sucked that year. And it took a miracle for them to beat like one of the worst Georgia teams, really the worst Georgia team in Kirby Smart's tenure.
Yeah.
So like that's all they have. I'm okay with that. So I mean, the dogs pulled it out. But let's get into our 10 stats that tell the story. And I'll let you kick this one off with the first stat here.
All right. So our first one, and this one kind of covers a theme for us, but the first one is UGA went 0-for-2 on fourth down. And I'm going to preface everything that I'm going to say with this. I love Kirby. I really do think he's the guy. He knows the players. This year, more than ever, he's letting his coordinators do their jobs, and they're doing them really well. So, like, I love Kirby as a coach. I just think he has to get better at game management and deciding when it's worth doing something risky and when it's not. And
yeah,
we kind of get, like, the perfect two examples in this game of – I'll talk about the goal line one first. So the goal line, like, I don't hate it. It's around the 1 yard line. There's not enough time left in the first half for Tennessee to do anything if they stop us. Like, is it 100% the right call to not take like the easy points? I don't know, but this was Kirby's like, prove it. Like, I want the offensive line. I want like the offense to prove to me like you guys can score. And he gave them that opportunity and they didn't execute. And so like, if we did not have the defense that we have this year, like that could have been like a huge mistake because Tennessee had so much momentum going into the half. Like
they had
the two long passes, which were for their entire offense, but it's like, they were believing they were going to beat us. And then we, you know, end the first half with that play. And it's like, we're going into the locker room. Like what are we going to do? Like we can't get a yard on this team. So that one, it's tough. It could go either way. The one that really bothered me is in the second quarter on our own 38 yard line. Fourth and one, and I get the, you know, we should be able to get 1 yard. Like, I totally agree. Like, our offensive line, even though it's not last year's, like, we should be able to pick up a yard. We have the talent. We have the recruiting. I mean, we have the coaches do it. Like, this should happen. But it's like, if we don't get it, is the flip side of that worth it? Like, is it worth giving Tennessee the ball on our side of the field for probably the first time of that game when they have about 60 yards of offense. And so it's like, we have a defense that when we pin a team back, our defense thrives. Like, our defense thrives on a team, like, being on their own 20, on their own 25-yard line. Like, I'm not worried about our defense giving up a long drive because they rarely do. And so I think to run that risk and then us not get it, you know, whatever, bad spot, bad push, whatever you want to say, we don't pick it up. Jarrett G, you know, drops a dime that, you know, puts DJ Daniels on, you have one job, you know, gets completely turned around, and that was tough on him. But I think, you know, we dug ourselves in a hole there that gave Tennessee a spark. I just feel like with Jake Camardo punting the way he is, like, how do you not just pin Tennessee back deep? Because you know he's going to do it. Tennessee has the ball inside, like, their 20, and then it's like, are they going to put a drive together? No. And then we get the ball back probably in better field position than we had it before.
Better
so I think
position.
That's a tough, I think that's a tough one for Kirby. But, you know, I'm just worried that one of these games is going to actually bite us worse than it does. But, you know, we win this game and we can forget about it and move on. So those are my things.
I mean, to me, Tennessee was kind of a survive and advance game. Like, we just needed a win because it's like, if we win this one, regardless what happens against Bama, our season pretty much comes down to Florida and then the SEC championship if we beat Florida.
Yeah.
So we're in a great position because of it. And I'm hoping we learned our lesson on some of those. Because like you said, it's not that we're too aggressive. It's the times when we choose to be aggressive. Last time we played Alabama, SEC championship game, entire second half, we put our tail between our legs and play scared on offense or not aggressive for almost 30 minutes. And then after all of that, we go for it on 4th and 11 with a fake punt with the quarterback in the game who has never been in the punt formation ever. So it's obvious that it's a fake punt. They get in defensive formation and we still try it. Like, that's when we choose to be aggressive. It's that kind of stuff where it's like, it's not that we're too aggressive. It's that we're too aggressive at, like, seemingly the wrong times. And of course, hindsight is 20/20 on this stuff.
Yeah.
And that one yarder, you know, if we had gotten it, I think people would have praised Kirby for being gutsy. But at the end of the day, like you said, with the way Jake Camardo is playing, with the way our defense is playing, we pin them back. We might score on defense, honestly, the way that game was going.
Yeah.
If we don't score on defense, then they're likely punting to us and we're getting the ball with better field position anyway. Because we probably have a better punting game than they do. So it's a little bit of risk aversion that you want to see in that scenario, and especially in that type of game. It wasn't like – it was different. Like, watching Ole Miss play Alabama, it was like, there was a time Ole Miss didn't go for it on, like, 4th and 8. And I was like, oh, they need to go for it because they're not going to get a stop, and they're going to go down 2 possessions if they don't score a touchdown here. But with Georgia-Tennessee, if anything – I mean, it's a low-scoring game, or it could have been a low-scoring game if we wanted it to be. And there's not a lot of urgency. We're not in a shootout. We don't have to go for it on 4th down.
Yeah.
So I know that frustrated a lot of Dog fans, but like I said, made it out with a win, pretty decisive win ultimately, and that gets me to the theme, and this is going to kind of encompass our next 3 stats, that Georgia – it's a second-half team. I love saying that every year. In the words of Stetson Bennett, you want to be a second-half team. Doesn't mean you want to be terrible in the first half. That was a paraphrase, but he essentially said that. But courtesy of Dane Young with UGASports.com, UGA has trailed twice this season at halftime. And in the second half of those games, UGA has outscored its opponents 59-3. Another stat here is in the 33 minutes after Tennessee took the lead, UGA outscored them 27-0. And also, UGA has not allowed a second half touchdown this season so far. Second half team.
Yeah. I mean, my goodness. This is definitely a trend that has picked up from last year, too. If you look at our defense played last year, I mean, we did not. We, like, very seldom would give up points in the third quarter. The fourth quarter is a little bit of a different story, but, I mean, it's like, no matter what we're adjusting to, like, Kirby and Dan Lanning can go into the locker room at halftime and make everything that much worse for whoever we're playing. You know, this week with Tennessee,
yeah,
I think they realized, like, look, like, Garantano can throw it and his receivers can make plays if we give him a chance to. So, like, let's just not give him a chance. And he just dialed up constant pressure that entire third quarter and really the fourth quarter too. And so it's like they were able to digest the first half, realize, look, the defense played well, but instead of being complacent and saying, like, well, let's keep doing the same thing, they're not really getting any long drives going. They're like, look, we got burned deep on two balls, so let's just not give Tennessee's quarterback the time to get that ball off. And sure enough, they did that. And I mean, they've done that week in and week out with how they adjust at halftime, but that definitely is a promising stat to lean on.
Yeah.
As we go into these bigger games, is, you know, if we do get down, you know, what are the coaches going to do to make an adjustment, and then is it going to work? And obviously it's a yes right now.
Yeah, especially on the defensive side of the ball. And that's kind of something that over the years, it seems like Alabama has kind of been the master of making those halftime adjustments. But Kirby so far this season, maybe it's because he set such a low bar in the first half of games against Arkansas and Tennessee that we're like, wow, he's so great in the second half because they're just doing what they should have done out the gate. But no, I do think they're making great adjustments. I think it'll be interesting to see against Alabama because, you know, Alabama's going to be equally making adjustments at halftime and adjusting to what we're doing on defense and how our offense is playing. So it's a game where we could be down 31-0 at half, or we could be up by 14. I'm not really sure what's going to happen, but I do think that those halftime adjustments are certainly going to be something to keep an eye on all season, and something that gives dog fans some confidence, even trailing going into a second half.
All right. Another theme of the Tennessee game was just how well we stopped the run. So some stats on this one for you, Doug. Tennessee had negative 20 rushing yards in the second half.
Oh, my gosh.
Negative one rushing yards in the game. Georgia held Auburn and Tennessee to a combined 38 yards on 49 carries. And then last one, which will actually come with a trivia question just for you. So UGA has not allowed a rushing touchdown by our running back since the 2018 season. And Doug, who was the last running back to score a touchdown on Georgia?
2018 season. Hold up. Give me a second. I'm thinking through like each game that year. SEC championship was Alabama. Was it Najee? No. The other running back for Alabama, right?
Yeah. So it was
Oakland Raiders. Josh Jacobs.
Nailed it.
Because he fumbled in the end zone. I don't know if you remember, but he fumbled and we thought it was a turnover. And then they overturned it and made it a touchdown. And we were like, you've got to be kidding. Like, we were going to lose this game.
That was the very last time that a running back scored on Georgia's defense.
Good gosh. Well, I would expect Najee to get one this weekend, but I hope I'm wrong. I hope we keep it up.
Yeah, I think the trend is there. And I think this is like, I mean, this is a perfect test for our front seven. Is like, okay, like, you've taken down, you know, the best offensive line in the SEC with Tennessee and with people who
are doing finger quotes.
Yeah, doing finger quotes. Yeah. But, you know, Alabama is so well coached, and you know, they have a lot of experience in the offensive line, and then they have two, you know, dynamic running backs that are, you know, just future first second round picks. So I mean, it's the perfect litmus test for our defensive line and our linebackers to see if they can hold them.
I don't think anyone can say they have the best offensive line in the country or in the SEC when Bama's there. I like watching Alabama this last week. Mac Jones is just like standing around in the pocket. Like, he's just hanging out, like just kind of chilling, you know, looking in the crowd, waving at his girlfriend, you know, checking out, seeing what other girls are at the game. And then like, oh, I guess I'll throw it now. But there's so much time for him. The running backs have wide open holes and they look all world. So I think I think Tennessee was a nice warm up. It was like playing the JV before you play the varsity. As far as offensive lines go, that's just my impression of Alabama's offensive line. So I don't think we're going to hold Alabama to negative one rushing yards, but if we do, that'd be a phenomenal showing for our defense. But I mean, Najee Harris is a heck of a running back. They've got some other great backs too. They're kind of like us in that regard, where if it turns into that kind of ground and pound game, I think they're just as, if not more, capable than Georgia is at playing that kind of game. But they also got Mac threading the needle back there, and they got maybe the best wide receiver group in the SEC. So, heck of a team. But stopping the run last week was like one of my keys to the game. It's like, you got to stop the run against Tennessee. That's their bread and butter. Got to stop the run. If we can stop the run, we'll get this win. I think stopping the run will be huge for, you know, the Alabama game, trying to make them one-dimensional. And speaking of one-dimensional, this will kind of segue me into our next stat. Georgia at times was a little one-dimensional on Saturday. So Zamir White ran for just 2.3 yards per carry on 22 carries. And I know a lot of people were frustrated with him. I thought some of that was the positions he was being put in with obvious runs up the middle. So something to keep an eye on, see if we mix it up this week. But on the bright side at the running back position, Kenny McIntosh ran the ball for 5.6 yards per carry on 8 carries. Kendall Milton averaged 7 yards per carry, but like his 7 yards per carry was like he should have lost 4 yards and then he turned it into 7. Like he looked like Nick Chubb. I know everyone was making that comparison, but I mean, I think ball security is probably the reason he hasn't seen the field more, seeing him cough it up there. Like I bet you that's why he hasn't been playing, but that kid needs to get some touches.
Yeah, I heartily agree. I think with this, you know, this depth we have at running back, the coaches are just going to have to figure out how we rotate them on like a who's feeling it the most type basis. Like obviously, you know, Zamir is in that one slot right now because he's proven it in practice and, you know, he's worked that hard to get that spot. But at the same time, it's like, I would love to see in the Alabama game if, you know, McIntosh or if Kendall Milton is, you know, just busting long run after long run and like working hard for those extra yards, like, let them have a drive, you know, let them have a majority of the carries on a drive. And then, you know, if we score, we score. And then the next drive, you put Zeus or, you know, James Cook is doing better. You put James Cook back out there and you kind of get the rotation going. But I would love to see just like a little bit more of an even spread amongst the touches, just so when like Zeus is going in there, like it's not like every time we're handing it off to Zeus, it's first and 10 and like the defense is packing, you know, 8 or 9 guys in the box.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, again, with Zeus, Tennessee was daring us to beat them with the long ball. They were daring us to use Stetson Bennett's arm. They knew what Georgia does. I expect Bama to do the same thing. They were stacking the box. I don't care how bad your defense is. When you have a stacked box, I mean, we've seen years where Georgia struggles running the ball against some of the cupcake teams on the schedule because they're stacking the box and there's just way more bodies and it's hard to run, you know, with 6 guys against 9 guys in that same space. And so I think that some of that has to do with the passing game and developing downfield abilities a little bit more. But regardless, I would love to see us go with the hot hand at running back. A lot of time backs will get like in a groove, they'll get confidence and they'll pop up and they're ready. You know, they're just like wearing down a defense on their own. And sometimes it feels like we pull them while they're just getting going and put in the next guy. And so, and we saw that with Kendall Milton. I know his dad tweeted out like something, which I was like, is he going to be our LeVar Ball? Is he going to be the LeVar Ball of Georgia football? I mean, he's got a big personality. He's a jacked guy. You know, he's clearly an athlete. And I don't know. We'll keep an eye on him. He could be a future show guest.
Yeah, but definitely get him on the show.
Yeah, yeah. But Kendall Milton, definitely want to keep an eye on. And then special teams on Saturday. So Jack Podlesny, now known as Hot Pod, hit all 3 of his field goals with a long of 51 yards. So very encouraging, and we need more of that from Hot Pod. And then Jake Camarda, who this time last year everyone wanted, like, kicked off the team because they thought he was so bad, is now averaging 57 yards per punt, roughly. I think it's like 56.5, but he leads the NCAA in punting. Yeah, so he averaged 57 on Saturday, and he leads the NCAA with 51.4 yards per punt on the season. He is kicking bombs, and like the combo of him and our defense is great for Georgia, because when we have a 3-and-out, or if we even get a little bit of a drive going and then get stuffed, if we're able to punt it, if we don't turn the ball over, like the field position game, especially if like against Bama, if we can get into like more of a defensive battle with field position and time of possession being 2 of the biggest factors in the game, a guy like Jake Camarda is going to be a huge asset for Georgia.